This is JJ Outlaw.
This is T Outlaw.
And we're back with a brand new episode of the Gourmet Goober podcast. For now, you can catch me on the Twitters at JJ Outlaw and on Instagram at Gourmet Goober. And if you call it, you know, if you're on something else like Blue Sky, Instagram, Threads, Spotable, you know, just for Gourmet Goober. If you get someone, it's probably me. Too many other things, because my time on Twitter, and I refuse to call it X, it's Twitter, people. My time on Twitter, the clock is a ticking. It's a ticking. But until then, you can find me at JJ Alma. Anyways, I'm here as every episode with that dude, the Big Cheese, Big Daddy, aka T Outlaw. How's it going?
It is going well.
Do you like your new nickname, the Big Cheese, that I gave you?
Yeah, even though I'm not like Big Cheese Eater.
Oh, I know. I thought it was ironic.
Okay. I'll take it.
Because Big Daddy hates the cheese.
No, I eat cheese. It's just not like because of lactose intolerance. I only do so much of it.
Dude, I'm lactose intolerant. And as you say, I'm not a quitter.
No, you are not.
I'm that person that, for those of you who know, that Teen Titans Go episode where they had that badass song turn it into cheese. If that could be me, that would have been me. Yes. Mighty with the cheesy touch. That's how much I love cheese, even though I do like the intolerant. But I power through. But anyway.
Well, good to know. I'm great with that. But you, in terms of sign, you can find me on the Dirty X at T Outlaw and on Instagram at T Outlaw Josie Wells.
You legit call it X now?
Okay. I call it X, but for the sake of like whenever I type it in, it will always be Twitter.
Yeah. For one thing, when I type it in, it does say Twitter.
Yeah.
But then second of all, like, okay, so you call it X, right? So what happens when you post? You don't tweet. So yeah. What's the alternative? You exit? That sounds stupid.
If you tweet me, and I just say tweet, you're just going to be tweeting me on the X.
See, he didn't think that through.
Yes, no, he did not. See, I confused myself just even saying it.
So anyway, we are excited to be back. A super special episode of the Gourmet Goober podcast.
Okay. Yes.
And just as a head note, at the time of this recording, we had just passed International Women's Day. And if you go to the gourmetgoober.com, we decided to note International Women's Day with a celebration of four badass women who have made their mark in culinary history, including one person who I'm just going to put it out there. LaDonna. LaDonna, you know who you are, girl. I want to interview you for the show because you are completely badass. But yeah, one is Etna Lewis. We do a short dive in the life of Etna Lewis and her contribution to Southern cooking. And of course, Leah Chase and LaDonna, who is a food activist. She really works in order to help bring attention to food insecurity, which, you know, from my time of working with the Brother David Darst Center, I'm like really passionate about, you know, in food deserts. And the other woman is, I believe it's Patty Jajinich. I want to make sure I say her name right. She is considered to be like a major ambassador for bringing Mexican style cooking to the mainstream. And given it its due diligence, its honor amongst culinary cooking. So again, I wanted to feature four women and, you know, who've changed the game and representation and all of that great stuff. So yeah, check it out. It's on the blog, which by the way, it's still active. It's more than just podcast posts that we put there. So
well, congratulations to them.
By the way, did you know our blog is 11 years old this month?
Aw, that's so sweet. I did not know that.
Yes. The Gourmet Goober started in March of 2013. And how crazy is that? I mean, we just sort of started that as a way to, yo, I'm living in Northwest Indiana, and I'm just telling all my friends back in Chicago that I didn't move into the foodie wasteland. And just think of all the cool adventures we've had as a result of that blog. I mean, we got invited to judge like a pig fest.
We did.
I wound up on television and representing this really cool startup, which unfortunately is no longer with us, Dish Crawl. That blog actually led to the career that I have now, which is writing and editing and content creation. I would never have been able to make that transition into doing something more creative in my life. I probably would have been stuck still working in sales and finance if it wasn't for that blog. I mean, that blog has completely changed my life. And I just started it and, you know, one day it's like, I wonder if I could take a picture of this food and share it. And when you think of it, all of it's come out of it, it is amazing. And it's still around 13 years later.
Yeah, you have made tremendous gains from like day one to now. Tremendous.
I mean, we have a show based on the blog that's heard in 30 countries. Who would have thought of that, dude? And it's all from a little blog that honestly I started on Tumblr.
Hey, you got to start somewhere.
Right?
Exactly.
So, you know what that means now?
Cake?
Yeah, we got to go get a cake.
Okay. I'm always down for cake. Yes. I'm a fat kid, so.
But more than that, let me just take an opportunity to say thank you to those of you who've read the blog, who've, you know, promoted the blog, who found a way to us and given us, you know, the opportunities that we've had. People like Michael Puente, WBEZ, who was a fan of the blog and put me on television to share my expertise for the area. People like, you know, the great restaurants that we've had a chance to interview and be a part of the restaurant scene. And yeah, for you.
For me?
Yeah, thank you. You, because when I started it and I told you, so they're a fan of the blog and they want us here. And we're like, yeah. So we were like in weird. Remember that one time they invited us to like this underground, like, what was it? It was a Pac-Man party.
Well, it wasn't so much underground.
Well, it was a late night Pac-Man party.
Yes.
And it was for, of all things, it was a Pac-Man themed Mardi Gras party.
Yes.
And we're like, sure. The place didn't exist anymore, but it was the wildest thing, right? There was like these giant ass people dressed as Pac-Man, and they were throwing out Mardi Gras beads. The time that we wound up at the Brilliant Zillion Steakhouse, and we were with all these high muckety muck food critics, and they're like, well, who are you? We're the Gourmet Cooper bloggers.
Sorry, don't you know who we are? We are the Gourmet Cooper brand.
Man, don't you know who we are?
We got so dizzy that night.
We walked in like Snoop Dogg. Like, what's our name, fool? You know what it felt like? You know those like movie? Okay, you know like those rap videos of the 90s, right? Where they were always like people like shocked that the rappers moved into like the gated community.
Yes.
That's what that night felt like. Because we're just like, okay, well, we're just going to, you know, dress up a little bit. And we walked in and there are people in three-piece suits and shit. And we're like, oh, is that kind of party? But you know what? The people there at that Brazilian restaurant waited on us hand and foot. Okay. And remember, they brought us a bowl of bacon and we're like, it's just bacon. You said you'd never leave.
You brought me out there. So guess what? I wasn't leaving.
I was like, Big Daddy, they're going to leave at some point. You're like, no, direct my mail here. This is my new place.
That's right. I was ready to close down the restaurant on that one.
We had so many great memories. Oh, my God. Just, we're so blessed.
We went to an auto show with it.
Oh, that's right. Remember we went to that First Look Auto Gala?
The First Look Pacherity.
Yeah, every year at the Chicago Auto Show, one of the things they do, which is really incredible, is they have this fundraising gala that gives the high rollers of the Chicagoland area a private showing the Chicago Auto Show before it opens to the public. And Big Daddy and I were given the opportunity to go. Not only were we given the opportunity to go, but we were given, like, you were given, like, full reign. So you got, like, a tuxedo, and I got, like, a gown and everything. Like, all of it was covered, all expenses. And it was hilarious because I was just like, I'm going to be a big shot. I'm going to have this sexy-ass gown. I'm going to wear these high-heeled shoes. Big Daddy's like, oh, no, you're not. I practiced those high heels for weeks on end. I was so proud of it. I took two steps in that auto show, and I was like, no.
The one thing I remember from that night was you started off in high heels, but for some reason, one of the biggest swag items that everybody received was the pink Cadillac slippers.
Right. The Cadillac had, like, by their station, just like this box of slippers. And by the end of the night, all the women were in slippers. You're like, fuck, are you kidding? But yeah, it was incredible. We met the news team from the Chicago News 7 because I was invited to this special tasting of all the food that was served that night. Yeah, it was really, really incredible.
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah. So, like I said, this blog completely changed my life on a scale that I couldn't even imagine. So happy birthday to the Gourmet Goober, which, by the way, for those of you who are new listeners out there, I often get asked the question, what the hell is a Gourmet Goober? So for those who've never heard the story, I come from a large family of six people, you know, four siblings, and then my mom and dad. My mom, even though she could cook, wasn't a fan of it. So the person who actually taught me to cook and I give all credit to is my father. And my dad learned how to cook just by accident when he was on his own since he was about 15, 16. And he wanted us to be in a position that no matter what, we would always, you know, there's two girls, two boys. We all knew and understand the importance of being able to cook and care for yourself. So when it was time for us to come into the kitchen, we all had one-on-one time with my dad. And when it was my turn, my dad took to calling me the Gourmet Goober. He's like, hey, it's the Gourmet Goober's turn. Come join me in the kitchen. And we would make dinner. We would turn on Motown. We would dance. On Sunday mornings, when it was my turn to make breakfast before church, we would make breakfast and watch Star Trek reruns. It was like our thing. And so in honor of my father and how he instilled with me a love of cooking, that is where the show comes from. It's a nickname that he gave me, and it still lives on to this day.
That is so cute. I did not have that experience. You know what my daddy told me?
Go forth and find someone who could cook.
Actually, that was my mother. Because she knew if I was going to cook on my own, it would just be like me, bologna, and burgers. But no.
And Winnie's forever.
Exactly. But no, the only thing my daddy told me was at a certain point, all right, so we're going to go up to McDonald's and have ourselves like a nice little feast of Ed McMuffins.
Wow.
And I didn't like Ed McMuffins. So I would just go get a sausage biscuit and sit somewhere.
I'm just jealous that your parents let you go to McDonald's. That was like a huge thing for us. I think that there was many more of us in the house than you. Because when we went to like a fast food restaurant, that was like a thing, right? Like we'd even, at one point, we stopped going to like regular restaurants. And I think I spent the rest of my fine dining experience, quote unquote, from age 12 to 18 when I moved out, it was like a buffet. Like, I knew my way around every Golden Corral in the city of Indianapolis. Shout out to Golden Corral. Thank you for feeding all of us.
Okay, now granted, I'm not going to say that we went to McDonald's every day. That was not our, our lot in life. But, the good thing was, at least on my side, we had many blessings of Yes, my mama, for the most part, would cook breakfast, but like we also had, you know, kind of like in soul food, I had a great aunt who also did a great deal of cooking on the weekends. And what we would have would be like meals during the week that would be based upon Grandma Brown's cooking. So we were blessed in that respect.
And it's not to say that we didn't have family members who threw down. We did. I mean, my mama is from the South, right? So especially whenever we went down South, or even when my mama did cook, like looking back on that made me appreciate it on a level that I didn't when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I just, you know, I just wanted a bowl of like Fruit Loops or Sugar Smacks, as they were known back in the day. I think they changed their name. But back in the day, it was like Sugar Frosted Flakes. That's how old I am, right?
Mm-hmm.
and of course, my mom would not let us eat that. So we had to have like oatmeal or grits or rice for breakfast. And I'm just like, no one else eats that. Ew. And now as an adult, I'm thinking, you know what? Yeah, we live very well. But the whole idea of going to a fast food restaurant. Now, my mama was the epitome of, do you have that McDonald's money? Do you have the McDonald's money for all of you, not just you? Because she knew I was quite the hustler when I was a kid. We're not going to talk about my Rockefeller days. We're going to leave that alone.
Yeah.
Those who have listened to the show, you know, throughout our, gosh, we're approaching 5 years, throughout our 5 years existence, mm-hmm. I've known about the Rockefeller, but yeah.
Just, we did yeah. Good.
But yeah, happy birthday to the goober. And yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there. And I know we didn't talk about that in our production meeting, but it just occurred to me like, yeah, cake. So Big Daddy, outside of that, how was your week?
How was my week?
Yeah.
The week was fairly pleasant. We are approaching the Ides of March. And as such, beware of the Ides of March. Because you never know what is going to happen. It's always a spectacular time. But also, since it is March, we are approaching March Madness. It's starting to get a little crazy because, you know, that means college basketball is about to rain for the next 3 weeks. At the time of this taping, we are on the thrust of conference basketball tournaments. I am afraid to say that, like, our men's team from our common alma mater.
Ball State?
Yes. Unless they do a tremendous job this week, they will not be joining they're not joining the team of 64.
There's a chance for the women, right?
I'm sorry?
There's a chance for the women, though, right?
Yeah, there's a decent chance for the women. We're in decent space, but I know we also have to do really good in our conference tournaments also to join the women's round of 64.
You know what? I'm just going to give some good feeling out to the women. Chirp, chirp.
Yes.
I'm going to send some vibes their way because we are big Ball State boosters. So, yes.
Exactly. But along with that, coordinating with the women's game, I would like to give a shout out to Iowa basketball star Caitlin Clark. Now, I know that, you know, a lot of you people are like, you know, I heard about Caitlin Clark. I know she's done like a tremendous thing, but just a refresher, Caitlin Clark is one of the guards/forwards for Iowa. And Caitlin has now accumulated 3,000, as of this taping, 3,685 points, which is cool and all. But basically, that means that no person in the NCAA Division I, men's or women's, has reached that goal. She basically has scored more than P. Maravich, scored more than Michael Jordan, scored more than Shaquille O'Neal, like more than everybody. So she has done a tremendous deal for women's basketball, has brought in so many people to Iowa City to watch the women's game, and basically has almost in a roundabout way kind of carried the women's college basketball game on her back for the past year and a half.
So let me just say that for the people in the back. This woman is now the highest scoring person in the history of Division I NCAA basketball, men Correct. Or women.
Exactly.
First of all, that is badass.
Huge.
Second of all, I'm doubly happy for her, not only because of that, but because she announced that she's going to join the WNBA and because the Indiana Fever has the first pick. Welcome, Caitlin, to the Fever. I'm a huge Indiana Fever fan, if you don't already know. So, but seriously, all jokes aside, she, in her accomplishment, has kind of kept my whole family in, like, suspense for the past month while we're waiting for her to cross this line. You need to call my dad, by the way, because my dad has been waiting to hear from you and hear how excited we were. Every time I called my dad, he's just like, did you see? She's close. She's going to do it. Because, again, growing up, we loved women's basketball. But I'm excited. And like you said, her accomplishment has really elevated the game in a way that, you know, has proven that women, you know, I know so many people who claim, quote unquote, they're basketball fans, but not really, because they haven't really paid attention to her game, who found themselves raptured in her story, right? And It's just proven that, you know, that whole complaint of women's basketball can't be exciting. No, it can. You just been sleeping on it. And the fact, like you said, that she's really brought the nation to watching as she achieves this, you know, incredible goal for herself and for the game overall, basketball, is amazing. So shout out to her. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that, like, coming out of, like, the previous year, I know that, like, the big battle between, like, Caitlin Clark and Iowa and LSU women's basketball, who eventually won last year's NCAA women's basketball championship, was it started off like the interest or the, like, the revival of women's basketball, like, in the stratosphere, you know, the epic battle. But I'm willing to say that, yeah, I give Caitlin Clark, me personally, a great deal of respect for how she has carried women's basketball on her back this year and brought forth a new era. You know, when it used to be like, okay, oh, the women can't dunk, or, oh, you know, they can shoot a little bit, but, you know, they're not this or that. And then at one point, there were people that were calling her like, oh, yeah, you know, you're the next Larry Bird. No, Larry Bird was just a predecessor to what Caitlin Clark has escalated to a whole new level. So Larry Bird should be quiet now and let Caitlin Clark shine. So we give great credence to Caitlin Clark and everything she has accomplished and has yet to show. Now, that being said, in a horrible transition for me, before we came on the mic, the goober said something to me.
No. We don't have to talk about this.
Just for the fun of it, before the goober goes into how her week was.
You're just going to re-traumatize me.
Yes, I'm here to traumatize the goober have her react to what she brought to my attention.
I was just, okay, go ahead. Fine.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you know that after 17 years, coming this spring and summer, there will be the revival of the cicadas.
Yes, I hate cicadas more than life itself. They're scary looking.
Yes, so these random little bugs.
They're loud.
They're coming to the Midwest and, you know, the plains. They're known not only for their, I don't know, their evolution, and they just come out of, like, hibernation every X amount of years. They're known for their sound and sounds of fury. And I also remember people talking about how they were, you know, there were so many of them that they were almost turned into, like, edible treats. And I don't understand why that was a thing.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show, actually, when the cicadas emerged. What was it, last year? Across the country.
Yes. But now they, like, these super cicadas are back.
And they're just coming out of our area, right?
As far as I know, yes. But you know what the goober brought forth to me last night? The story of the cicada wee. Okay. And I removed that W and I'd like to add a P. Because apparently they have been warning us on the news about cicadas and their secretions. Do you know that there was once a book called Everything Poops? And we thought to ourselves, yes, everything does poop. But we did not think of other things such as, can bugs go wee-wee?
So apparently NBC News Chicago decided to do a story where basically they're explaining that cicadas do in fact urinate, which I'd imagine every creature does. I've never wanted to think about that before. Well, it's not that they pee. Apparently they pee a lot. Like a lot. So the idea is we're expecting thousands upon thousands of cicadas to emerge.
Millions, billions.
Stop it! Chicago-lit area. And as a result, we could be inundated by cicada pee.
And loud cicada wing.
Well, cicada pee.
They will be relieving their blasts all up and down your trees, your bushes, your cars.
And you. In fact, New York, I think the New York Daily News, they have an online magazine called The Cut. And they were explaining that cicadas do pee a lot. There's a consistency of watery tree sap. And the terrible news doesn't end there, where the chances are you've already been peed on by a cicada. Now, of course, apparently it's not dangerous. So it's not going to kill you, but, and it's odorless, so it's not like you're going to smell like the litter box by the time you get to your house. But I'm sorry, the idea that you could just be minding your own ass business walking down to Chicago and getting whizzed on by a cicada, it just horrified me to the nth degree.
Yeah, we're going to have a whole bunch of R. Kelly cicadas.
And of course, I mentioned this horrified to Big Daddy, who has been torturing me with that idea ever since.
I was like, what? Like, first she brought that to my attention, so as such, this is my revenge. But more importantly, I was like, why was this a thing? One, but two, for all those people years ago that were coming out with these little recipes for what to do with those cicadas, I would like to say to you, would this stop you from doing it now?
Well, to be fair, I mean, we eat other animals and other animals pee. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. There's actually a video of someone put it. Sorry. It's like.
You started this.
It's like cicadas peed. Oh, my God. It's like a bad insect porno.
Oh, dear Lord.
It's like Bug Bukaki.
Okay. I would like to say that for those people with sensitive ears and or those who might be traumatized.
Or don't know what that word means, don't Google it. Please don't. Yes. Don't Google it at work, ever.
We would like to say forward all questions and or comments to the Gourmet Goober.
You're the one who brought it up.
Hey, man, I was just giving you the story. I wasn't going, like, doing the deep dive.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay, I'm not an idiot, okay? I know reasonably, of course they do this. Like, we eat bacon and pigs do this. But the idea is they don't do it on you. So you could just be minding your business, walking down the street, and may have been whizzed on by a cicada. I can't. I'm going to have to travel with an umbrella this week, summer.
Yeah, think about that for your summer viewing. Okay, shall I let up on this now? Shall I, like, let this go?
Yes, because I'm thinking that my next position might be hybrid, which means twice a week at least, I'm going to be out amongst cicada wee. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Wear your good shoes. So anyway, as the horrible pivot, I would like to say to the Gourmet Goober, how was your week?
It was great before that.
I do my best.
Oh my God. I don't know how to respond to you now. I was really praying that you weren't going to bring that up on mic.
Oh, you knew it was coming. You just had to wait. So what has entertained you this week, Gourmet Goober?
You know, I have been working on a lot of behind-the-scenes projects with the Gourmet Goober, which I can't wait to share with you guys about. I am also been working on a new project that we're going to be launching fairly soon for Plum Good. So this is a shout out, or a request rather, not so much a shout out, where we are going to be launching a new podcast project that highlights really cool pet adoption stories, dog adoption, adoption stories. So if you have a story that you would like to share, and it'll be on the air, not on the Gourmet Gooper, but on a new podcast project that we're launching soon, drop us a line at thewolf, and I'll put it in the notes, at gmail.com. thewolf@gmail.com. And you can hear, you can hopefully be a part of that project.
thewolf.com?
thewolf@gmail.com.
Spell the wolf.
And I'll put the link in the notes. The wolf is THAWOOF.
Okay.
@gmail.com. It'll be a podcast that'll be hosted by myself, as well as our doggy producer, Braxton. I have to admit, he had a hand in helping to create this. Big Daddy is not at least going to be on the mic for us, but, you know,
behind the scenes.
He'll be working behind the scenes, but it's something that I want to do for a while. And especially since our doggy producer, who's now snoring on the couch behind me quite loudly, mind you. So all of that would be removed in post. I love saying that now. Yeah, it'll be a really cool thing. And it's something that I've been wanting to do for quite a while, in a way that I get to involve Brecky. And yeah, I already got this really cool story. Shout out to my friend Cook, which I can't wait to share with you guys. But again, it'll be a neat project that hopefully it will make everyone smile and not think about cicada wee. Speaking of making us laugh and smile, I wanted to close out our segment in something that has nothing to do with the trauma you inflicted on me.
Okay.
So, again, had we talked on the show previously about the debacle that Wendy was going through with their so-called dynamic pricing?
No, I don't think we have.
Okay. All right. So this was the news other than the cicada pee that kind of made us do a double take. Not that I'm trying to tie these two stories together. I am not. Wendy's, please don't sue us for that. But Wendy's had recently, near the end of February, they had what's known as an earnings call. And if you've not worked in finance like I used to back in the day, what that is basically they bring all the economists and people who follow them together on a call. Usually they speak to like the CFO, the CEO, and other people. They project how they've done for a quarter, financially speaking, and give them details on their next project as to how they're going to be responsive to their shareholders, right? So during a recent earnings call, Wendy's, which, by the way, I didn't know this, they're actually the second largest fast food joint in the United States. They said that they're going to pilot something that's called a dynamic pricing model, right? And so what that is, it's similar to what like Uber or Lyft does.
Okay.
So throughout the day, you know, like having taken Lyft and Uber and like large city like Chicago, or like when we were in London, for example, we did something similar, where based on things such as traffic, demand, if there's any activity that's going on, the price that it would take you to get from point A to point B may change throughout the day. So the way they explain it is they're going to take that idea and apply it to pricing their burgers and other offerings. So a menu item with the help of AI could subtly change so that at a time which burgers at higher demand, say lunchtime, it may be at a higher cost than when it's like slower mid-morning, you know, when they make the transition from breakfast to lunch.
Okay.
or slower in the evenings after the rush. And as part of that, they were going to spend $20 million investment in new digital menu boards that allow them to change prices quickly depending on demand. And Wendy's said that they were going to be doing that. And to be fair, it wasn't a new idea. Supposedly, McDonald's at one point, according to Time magazine, had experimented with dynamic pricing in certain locations. And Coca-Cola was actually doing that on a trial basis in Japan. So, again, in a nutshell, you decide to hit up Wendy's for lunch like everyone else is doing. You know, those times where we've driven past Wendy's and the cars are literally from the parking lot into the street.
Yeah.
And your burger may go up like a dollar or something, or maybe a few cents. But the idea is to chuck as much money, or grab rather, as much money as they possibly can during these high times.
Yes.
So people read that, and I know I told you about that, and I think your words were, the devil is a lie. Because you're not paying it.
And such other colorful language.
Exactly. That was the nicest thing Big Daddy said, because he loves himself a Wendy burger. So anyway, cut to less than a day later after that news got out, and then people are like, no, Wendy's, you cray, and we're going to go someplace else. So then Wendy's came out with their CEO clarified later that, hey, you know how we said we're going to be squeezing you out of this money? We were just kidding. And now we still spend the $20 million to roll out the digital menu boards. But we're not going to use that to roll the prices and make them higher.
Just not yet.
Just not yet. Now, here's the thing. So now there's people who are talking about this. And understandably, not only people who are disgruntled with Wendy's, you had mentioned after you found out, like, dude, I'm so going to eat, like, the hell out of Burger King's. And apparently Burger King thought better of that because they were offering free Whoppers through Friday, that Friday after they made that announcement. And they had said the only thing surging at Burger King is the fire to roast, you know, the burgers, which I just think is hilarious because, you know, Wendy's are like, oh, no, y'all misunderstand. We never meant to do that. And you and I were talking about, like, they totally meant to do that because, dude, you don't spend $20 million just for nothing, right?
Right.
So they totally were coming with those $20 million menu boards that were powered by AI. They're stuck with them, knowing that they can't use it for the intended purpose.
Oh, no, trust me. I'm under the impression they will be using them.
Oh, yeah, they're going to be using the fuck out of them because, dude, it's $20 million.
Yes. I would also like to give a heads up of all people, besides Burger King dropping that little, oh yeah, you know, the only thing going, you know, only thing flame fluctuating at our restaurants is the flame on our burgers. Arizona Tea, of all people, also dropped a tweet that said, you know, our tea remains the same.
At always, 99 cents. That's right.
At 99 cents. We will not be changing for anybody.
So the only people who really got the most run out of that announcement are other brands, apparently.
Yes.
So one, Big Daddy can rest easy knowing that he doesn't have to pay a surge price for his Wendy burger. But two, just curious, is there anything that you can imagine that if they came to you and said, we are going to move that surge pricing, that you would totally do? Because I have to admit, if Kuma's Corners, which by the way, I'm not paid by Kuma's Corners. Kuma's Corners do not know me. But I will say unequivocally, the best burger in this planet here or the next universe or whatever lies in Kuma's Corners. Like literally, I stopped reviewing burgers and other burger restaurants on the gourmetgoober.com the day that you took me there. Yes. And I just told you that all I'm going to write is this burger is the shit. Kuma Corners is my personal place that I would, if they came to me and said, yo, we're going to jack this price a dollar, I'm going to be like, come at me, bro. Let's go. What about you? What is your thing that you would do?
Okay. It's interesting you say that, because I know that one of the places that, if you've ever really looked really hard at their menus, even though, like, you would think it doesn't change their board, I think every day they seem to change the price on us, and I think other people have noticed. Have you ever looked at the Five Guys, like, menu and noticed that the price does fluctuate, but you, I mean, from day to day, but you never really notice it?
Do they? Does Five Guy really fluctuate?
Not, like, I wouldn't say it's a daily thing, but there have been people that have been complaining that the prices have escalated at such an interesting rate that they're starting to fall off the Five Guys train.
Okay.
Because people are like, you know what? Your burgers are too damn high. But I would say Five Guys is pretty close. I mean, they do make a pretty good fresh burger. Also, I mean, have you ever, I don't do it regularly, but when was the last time you went to Shake Shack?
It's been a while.
Yeah. Now, Shake Shack does make a good burger, but I start to wonder with them also, like, the movement of their prices, because depending on where you are in terms of location, the prices do fluctuate also. But yeah, I would say either Shake Shack or Five Guys, or even, I'm a huge fan of the Portillo's, especially in downtown Chicago. So I would probably introduce them also. I got to freely admit, because Portillo's is, you know, my equivalent to your Kuma's. But man, that probably the only place I would, you know, depending on the drive, where I would pay extra for their sandwiches.
You know, I have to admit, Portillo's would probably be another one. But again, too, I take that with a caveat, because it also depends on where you are, right? So, mm-hmm. For example, in Chicagoland, that would almost make more sense. But like back in the day when I lived in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, going to grad school, I would not expect to have the same pricing and the same surge.
Yeah.
So it also depends on the neck of the woods you're going to be buying your burger in. So interesting. That's Kuma's. If you're listening, please don't do that. I mean, I totally pay it, but don't do that. Do not listen to me. So I tell you what, we're going to take a moment and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to do a brief section of stories that cross the intersection of food and pop culture. You're listening to the Gourmet Makeover podcast. We will be right back. This episode of the Gourmet Goober podcast is brought to you by Plum Good Media. Plum Good Media is the indie multimedia production company based in Chicagoland, where our mission is to create an inclusive space where we elevate fun, bold, and smart content for all. Check out our shows and learn more about our philanthropic work at plumgood.com. That's Plum, GOODE.com. Everyone, this is JJ Outlaw.
And T Outlaw.
And we are back with the second segment of the Gourmet Goober podcast, where we talk about the three stories of the week that made us laugh, made us think, that we call What's Eating Us, which covers that intersection that often exists between food and pop culture. This week, we have three completely crazy stories. At least in my opinion, they're crazy. That Vic Daddy and I just couldn't stop talking about, so we thought it would be interesting to bring it to you. And the first story is actually something that really shook me for a number of reasons. And this is involving something that I'm sure many of you have heard about regarding what it's being called the vegan donut scandal.
The vegan donut scandal.
So basically,
let's call Kerry Washington out.
Yes, we need to make sure it's handled. But okay, basically, as we all know, if you have a vegan diet, you do so because you adhere to certain dietary standards, you know, no ingredients made from byproducts of animal of any type. Also, if you're gluten-free, obviously there's certain things that you want out of your donuts, mainly gluten, because you might have a sensitivity to it. So according to Food and Wine, and it was also covered pretty much everywhere, what happens if the donut that you buy, okay, let me do this a different way. How sure of it when you go into a particular place, right, that advertises vegan and gluten-free donuts, you kind of have to take your word for it, right? I mean, you're not there when they make it.
Exactly.
So what happens when that may not be the case?
Yeah, you kind of have to go on faith.
Well, in the case of there's one place that's out of Long Island, New York, since 2019, it's called Cindy Snacks. Apparently, they're extremely well known for offering vegan and in many cases, gluten-free choices for their diners. So, in fact, I guess, believe it or not, it's my understanding, it's the only vegan food market in all of Long Island, New York since 2019.
So, to knowledge, yes.
Yeah. So it's pretty substantial. And what they do is they have relationships with other providers of baked goods and snacks and prepared food. You know, it's kind of like a smaller Whole Foods, if you will, for a very specific clientele. One of the suppliers that they've been utilizing is one called the Savory Fig. And they have been selling their donuts since December 2023.
You said the Savory Fig?
Yeah, it's called the Savory Fig. It's founded by a woman, I believe her name is Michelle Siriana. And they kind of need their space. I mean, if you go to their social media site, they were pretty well known as a vegan bakery out of a local nearby area. Patchogue, I think it's called, New York. So they sell donuts, but then along with that, they do everything like scones, cinnamon rolls, cookies, brownies. Apparently, they're like one of the go-to places for gluten-free vegan donuts.
Okay.
And so they were kind of in a good relationship with Cindy Snacks, right? So they would get a new donut in, they would highlight on social media. Well, that is until recently. In late February, the owners of Cindy Snacks, two people by the name of John Stengel and Indiana Cindy Kay, went online and they posted on their Instagram something that they were a little concerned about.
Okay.
Or let me just back up. They noticed something was off, but they actually started talking about this in early March. And so at that point, in an Instagram post, Stengel shared that they had received a donut from the Savory Fig that contained some, well, odd-looking decorations.
Okay.
There was a donut in particular, one with tiny pink and orange D, like the letter D, shaped sprinkles. And at that point, he writes, I immediately became concerned as to why this one donut was decorated differently than the other in a strikingly similar way to a recognizable chain. And I'm going to ask you to step back and think about pink and orange and the letter D.
Pink and orange and the letter D.
Yes. So at this point, he said, I pulled all the items delivered to one of our racks. I stored them in the back out of precaution. And then basically he reached out and attacked Siriana and said, yo, what gives? His suspicion, which you could probably already tell from the color of the sprinkles and the letter D, were that these weren't donuts that the Savory Fig made. These were Dunkin' Donuts that they were passing off as their own.
They were from the Dunkin'. The Dunkin's have infiltrated the Savory Fig.
Exactly. So he was like, yo, if these Dunkin' Donuts, obviously they could have ingredients. They're not all gluten-free. They're certainly not vegan. Is this like something that you're passing off?
Okay.
Now, at that point, she responded that, no, they weren't Dunkin' Donuts, but if you want to pull them, you can. But, you know, I assure you, these aren't the ones. He went on to say that she explained that the sprinkles that were used for a birthday party that she did for a friend. And while the sprinkles were indeed tiny letters, she said she got them from Amazon. She assured them that they were vegan. She even went as far as texting him a screenshot of the HomeKit happy birthday letters that she used, supposedly, saying, hey, these are the sprinkles. So they decided to do a little investigating.
Okay.
They ordered the sprinkles themselves. Not only the sprinkles not labeled vegan, they don't even match the one that was on the donut.
It was like vegan CSI.
Exactly. So then they kind of put it out and they did some digging. And they even went as far as tested one of the donuts with an at-home gluten test. And the donut came positive for gluten.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So they basically came clean and they're like, look, we were offering these donuts. We were offering the donuts, taking them at their word that these were vegan donuts, that these were gluten-free donuts. Hey, we may not have been telling the truth by virtue of what they told us as well. And if you went back, I guess they were promoting the savory fig pretty hard.
You know? We'll see why, because it's not a very common like thing to put out like straight up vegan donuts in like a mass production.
So then it becomes an issue, right? Because if you have celiac disease, this could literally almost kill someone depending on the amount of gluten.
True.
And they, you know, had to assume that given the recognizable logo design where the donuts really came from and what other ingredients they have, they said that this donut and most likely all of her donuts contained a significant amount of gluten. And more than likely, she didn't bake them.
Ooh, that could be a problem.
So right now, as you can imagine, everything is up in arms and there are several main, TikTok accounts with huge followings doing a deep dive on this, particularly ones that are focused on dietary issues, celiac issues, gluten-free and things like that. So it's important to note that Sirianni is standing her ground and basically said that this is not the case. But that leaves me with a lot of questions. Like, one, for these kind of restaurants, I mean, or, you know, these bakeries or, you know, places like Whole Foods, are they on the hook when the supplier that they work with aren't really being honest? And then two, dude, of all the donuts you steal Dunkin' Donuts? Do you know how crappy those donuts are? I mean, they took the name Donuts off of Dunkin'. No one calls it Dunkin' Donuts anymore. They call it Dunkin' because you all go there for the drinks. And maybe a Munchigan.
Hey, man.
I'm serious. Did they not think they were going to get caught?
Hey, man, I used to like those Munchigans.
Look, Munchigans are good when they're warm. But okay, when they get cold later in the day, they're like little sugar-coated bricks.
It makes good for throwing at people.
Okay, we are not going to talk about using donuts as potential weapons. But what do you think about that? Because I just think that's insane that she could have been going on the radar perhaps months with this, you know, Cindy Sachs passing off donuts that she didn't bake, that they're very obvious Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, that's the thing. You have to stand behind your brand. So, yeah, I feel bad for Cindy Sachs that, yeah, they, with all the things that, you know, certain suppliers put out there, they have to have belief that the vendor that they're working with is being forthright and true. Now, granted, I'm willing to say that during the process of making things, you know, gluten-free and vegan and whatnot, I'm sure that there have been a few mistakes that have occurred and that, yeah, certain materials that we thought were vegan might have had a little dairy hit, just a little bit. But in my mind, you kind of have to go with what your name says. If you're vegan and your stuff's not vegan, that's one. But true, if you're going to mess this up, don't mess it up with a Dunkin' donut. At least get a good quality donut.
Look, let me just say for the record, because I know some of our listeners out there, y'all like the Dunkin'. I've gone on the record and saying that In the grand scheme of things, there's so many better donuts out there than Dunkin'. And I know that, it's kind of like a Krispy Kreme, you know, when you get it warm, then yeah, it kicks ass. But later as it goes, it kind of, it doesn't sit with, it satisfies your craving for something sweet. It's kind of like, okay, Dunkin' Donuts are like the Arby's of donuts.
You beat me to the punch, yes.
Yeah, so it satisfies you, something sweet, but it doesn't quite sit right with your soul.
No,
right?
let's just play it for what it is. Dunkin' Donuts, the donuts from Dunkin' are pretty much the same way as you explained about Arby's. It's like, you know, if you can't find a Krispy Kreme, because the Krispy Kremes are not everywhere. Okay, if you couldn't find a Stan's donut. I'm sorry?
A Stan's.
Yeah, Stan's or, you know, some high-end donut place. You're like, okay, Dunkin' is for the most part everywhere. And this, you know, it's kind of like, you know, more than McDonald's. You know, you can always find one somewhere. But it's like, well, if you're going to go good quality and try to, like, pass it off as your own, Dunkin', really? Really?
You know what? Maybe that's why they did it, though. Because, again, let's be honest with, you know, maybe giving some exception to Ben Affleck, because I'm convinced he likes everything on the menu. But for the most part, most people go to Dunkin' nowadays. They don't advertise, like, new donuts and stuff. They advertise new drinks. Braxton and I take a road trip to Dunkin' all the time. We'll get a pup cup. I'll get a drink. You know, their hash browns are good. Sometimes Bracky and I will split a hash brown. But you know what I never get? They're donuts. Never. So maybe that's why that they figured that they could pull it off. Because most people don't think of Dunkin' as a donut place anymore.
Yeah.
So it might have been harder to pass off a Stan's donut. Because, you know, if Stan's in their area, people know what a Stan's look like. But a Dunkin', they could be a dime a dozen. Right. At least don't use the one with the letter D in the same color. That kind of is a dead giveaway. Especially if you go online, and I think as of this recording, the post with the donut is still on there so you can see. But it's very obvious a Dunkin' donut, as people have come to notice and respond to it. So right now, the New York Division of Food Safety and Inspection, as well as the local Department of Health, they're currently investigating. As of this recording, the Safety Fig hasn't commented publicly on the issue, although I believe they may have pulled down their Instagram account as well, because as you can imagine, people were commenting on it. But this is just a reminder to buyer beware. And to those people out there who ate it, who suffer from celiac, because I know some people with a sensitivity towards gluten, and it's kind of dangerous, the idea that they had passed this off. So grateful that no one gotten sick from this, but yeah, this is just a reminder to buyer beware. And to those who bought the donuts, I feel bad for you as well, because you deserve better than Dunkin'.
You do.
Mean, if you're going to get like a donut, clearly Dunkin' will never sponsor us, which is sad.
I'll live.
At least for the donuts. But yeah. So moving on, because like I said, obviously Dunkin' is known for their drinks, as well as its main competitor, which of course is Starbucks. So Starbucks is pretty much pride themselves on thinking differently when it comes to their drinks. And I think in part they do that to justify the fact that their drink is hella expensive. Like, dude, I'm actually embarrassed to say this, but like recently I went to Starbucks and by the time I put the oat milk in, I believe it was almost $7 for a latte.
That's basically a whole sandwich.
So let me just say, now that I think about it, it probably wasn't the best idea.
No, I trust me. There are a lot of people I know that you know, go to Starbucks because they need a specific type of kick.
Yes.
And you just know you're going to be paying for that kick.
Well, that is not what this story is about, however. Okay. This story is actually about a new thing that Starbucks has officially offered as part of their spring menu. As of March the 7th, they have decided to run with lavender as their latest drink idea. So they introduced two drinks, the iced lavender oat milk latte, and then they also have an iced lavender cream oat milk matcha.
Okay.
So I personally, in full disclosure, and we'll get in that in a moment, I actually tried recently the oat milk latte because, you know, I wanted to dive in and excuse to pay rather sheepishly $7 for my drink.
So you actually tried this concoction?
Yes.
Okay.
And the reason why this is actually making news is I'm not the only one. The only problem is people online are kind of divided as to their response to it. And now there is an opinion where I've been seeing reports on it everywhere from the Today Show to Food and Wine, where people basically say that the latte tastes like soap.
Tastes like soap.
Yes.
You mean like wash your mouth out with soap?
Yes.
Because you're paying $7 for somebody to wash your mouth out with soap. Okay. Good stuff.
So basically, according to Food and Wine, after the products launched, people immediately took to places like Reddit and TikTok to talk about it. And they found the lavender powder to be overpowering. And they said it straight tastes like soap. And here's the thing. People are kind of divided on the experience of it. It's sort of like, I guess maybe the closest thing I can relate it to is cilantro. Okay, so there are people out there who straight up love the taste of cilantro, myself included. And there's some people that when their taste buds hit cilantro, they say that it too tastes like soap. So right now it's something, and I'm not sure if I can take that out in post. So if I can, you didn't hear anything, but if not, you know, you heard someone race by our house, like they're part of the Indy 500. So anyway, they're actually going as far as talking about this and putting out statements assuring people that no, it is factual and natural flavor and not soap.
Okay.
For the record, I have tried the Starbucks latte. I really liked it. I found the lavender to be really, really subtle. And it just added just a little something extra to it.
And didn't make you feel like you needed to go take a bath in it.
No, it did not.
Like you can scrub the back of your okay.
But what do you think about it? Would you try the lavender flavor at Starbucks?
Would I try it?
Yes.
I'm actually going to be upfront with you. I actually did try it.
Wait, you took a sip of my coffee?
I did.
Okay, for one, I did not know this.
Yeah, we are definitely husband and wife. Yes, I sampled your drink. Just a little bit. Just a little bit with a little twist.
Little twist.
Little twist.
So did it taste like soap? Because I didn't taste anything.
No, it tastes like a drink that had like a little bit of, it was a little bit lighter than chamomile. I didn't really have a problem with it. It just tastes like a traditional drink at Starbucks. There was nothing outstanding about it, but yeah, it was very subtle.
Well, you know, if that doesn't float your boat, just know you could also get something extremely different in Japan to mark the start of the spring year. This one, is, I think, is a little bit more refined in terms of taste, where if you're in China.
Is it China or Japan?
You know, I think I misspoke. I think it's in China.
Okay.
But they have a pork-flavored latte.
Okay, there we go. Now let's talk. I'm here.
I figured you'd be more into this story. So it's made in old of the Lunar New Year. And it's only in a select Starbucks within China. It's a limited edition beverage, which name translates to Abundant Year Savory Latte or Lucky Savory Latte. And it's a sweet and smoky drink that is infused with natural pork flavored. It's inspired actually by Dong Po braised pork, which is a dish served through traditional family gatherings. Now, the reason why they did that is eating meat means prosperity in the coming year. And so by drinking this, it's meant to inspire prosperity. The drink actually contains something called a Dungpo pork sauce, espresso, steamed milk, a drizzle of extra pork sauce, and it's garnished with a piece of pork. Its price, it's 68 yuan, which is about $9.45. And it's only available at 25 Starbucks Reserve stores throughout China. So, would you be one of the lucky few who tries that?
Okay, so first of all, China's got what? 2 billion people? And they can only put it in 25 of their spaces?
Yep.
Okay. Nice to be exclusive, one. But two, okay, I'm conflicted here. Because, of course, I'm a man who does enjoy the other white meat. I do enjoy a little pork. I like pork upon top of pork. I'm a man who says that, yes, you know, bacon is because they love us.
Bacon is because pork loves us.
God loves us. But yes.
I've not heard this theory of yours.
I have had this in the back of my head. Bacon can make anything, almost anything, almost anything. It can make it a party. It can make anything taste better. But I'm conflicted here because, yes, I would love the aromatic scent of something very delicately, you know, braised in pork.
Right.
But as a person who has handled pork, and sometimes inappropriately, I would tend to wonder, like, as you deal with pork, you also have to deal with, like, what renders from pork, like the slight pork fat. And as a person who has handled this pork, you really don't want that pork fat in you longer than you need to. And I would sometimes wonder if that fat is almost bad for you, you know, especially as you're taking this in, like through a drink. I would wonder if the taste would not be as good as I'm thinking it would be.
Well, you know, that's a good point. Because when I think of pork and like drinking it, I'm thinking like in terms of, and the name slips me right now, but tonkatsu ramen.
Okay.
Which is that really rich, thick, porky ramen noodle broth that I really love. And I adore it, but I don't think I would want anything like that near coffee. I'm kind of intrigued by it, and especially given the garnish, because depending on what type of pork it is, like maybe like a candied bacon or something, that I think would set it off really nicely. But do you think they would ever offer something like this in the United States?
Yes. If they could, they would. Also,
would be a tough sell, though. But anyway, go ahead.
No, I agree with you. It would probably be, it would take a little convincing. We'll start with that.
Right.
Because I'm thinking there are people who might think the same way I do. That maybe, you know, putting pork in your coffee might be reaching a little bit too far. But it's going to be popular down south.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But also, can we, you know, take a step back and say that Starbucks, for as much as they make you pay, will literally say to you that, yeah, we will throw anything in their drink to make it popular. They'll be like, oh, no, we can put, you want butter in your coffee? We'll put butter in your coffee. Do you want lavender in your coffee? Yeah. If down south, you know, if we could convince people to put sunflower seeds in their coffee, they would.
I don't know, I was thinking like gravy, you know, like, you know, sausage gravy.
That's true.
Or better yet, no. Red eye gravy. I don't know if you've ever had red eye gravy, but key ingredient in red eye gravy is actually coffee. Red eye gravy flavored lattes. That would work.
Okay, Starbucks, hit us up and don't steal our ideas.
Yes, if you're listening, don't steal our ideas. Don't you dare.
That's right. You heard it here first.
Actually, I would kind of want, and now I want something with red eye gravy on it. Damn it.
You tried it. But yeah, I tend to believe that Starbucks will literally try to put anything in a drink because you, Goober, and a lot of other people, because trust me, it's not just you. We're going to Starbucks and I am just, almost just want to just hear the different ways that people order their drinks at Starbucks.
Okay, look, don't accuse me of that, because I know that the people at Starbucks, they work really hard. And those people who put in those ridiculous special orders, I've seen the stink eye they give those people. I never want someone to hand me a drink after doing the stink eye.
Yes, I give.
You never know.
I give the baristas, and especially the people that take the order for at Starbucks, especially those who go through the drive-thru, I would like to say bless you people, because y'all have to hear through that horrible microphone the most insane combinations of an order that I'll be sitting here. I'll be like, you know what? Screw it. I quit. I'm like, okay, you want a half decaf mocha choca.
That mocha choca.
Butter fuco, you know, with Irish cream.
Well, if you want to try the latte one yourself, the lavender latte yourself, I'll put in the show notes a link to it. You can kind of check it out, as well as we do have listeners in China. So if you happen to grab one of the lattes to serve all of 25 Starbucks Reserve stores within the country, please let us know what it tastes like. We're kind of interested in that. Speaking of unusual dining and beverage experience, that kind of leads to our last story, which is the question, how far would you go to get a unique, totally exclusive, Michelin-rated dining experience?
How far would I go?
Yes.
You're lucky if I go into Chicago.
Okay. Right? Clearly, Big Daddy's not willing to go far.
Yeah, I freely admit, you can have a Michelin star experience at a lot of places. It's just some people just don't rate it Michelin stars. But yes, how far would you go?
Well, this is food for thought. Yeah. There's a restaurant that's out of Copenhagen that I don't remember if we've talked about it on the show. It's called Alchemist. It's run by Chef Rasmus Munk, right? And it's already a noteworthy restaurant, because it's known for its 50-course dining experience that runs 6 hours long. You heard me. 50. 50.
Like 50 cent.
Yes. Okay. So 52 diners per night can take advantage of this dining experience that is supposedly so noteworthy that over 10,000 people are currently on a waiting list for a reservation. But that is not the most insane thing that they're marketing right now. Mm-hmm. So Monk, who is actually a chef that has earned 2 Michelin stars over the course of his career, and he's actually, I believe, like in the top 5 of the 50 best chefs. Okay. So he announced recently that he is partnering with a space travel company called Space VIP and Space Perspectives for what is being billed as the first, quote unquote, stratospheric dining experience. So get this.
What?
The meal is going to be served Space Perspectives Spaceship Neptune's capsule. It'll be limited to 6 people, and you will basically be taking a 6-hour journey more than 100,000 feet above sea level, and it's $495,000 per person. The look on your face. We gotta start doing this with the camera on, because you have this look of like, I'm out.
You know what I have the look of? I'm gonna tell you what I have the look of. Nope.
He just put off his headset like, dude, no. No, we're not even doing the story. We're not talking about the story.
Because I know I'm not included in this story. And people like me are not going to be included in the story unless we aim high. Aim high, Willie. Aim high.
$495,000 per person. But get this. Okay. So it's a 6-hour meal. You'll be literally on the edge of space. They stage it so that you'll be able to watch the sunrise again from 100,000 feet above sea level. You'll actually be given spacesuits by luxury bespoke French ski wear brand Ogier.
Not Le Coq Sportif.
No, not Le Coq Sportif.
Okay.
not the little granimals. No. Ogier. The craft will also have a full bar, and as part of the experience, you'll have a champagne toast as it reaches the head of space.
If I live to see it. If I don't blow up on the way up there.
Now, keep in mind, this is a space balloon, right? So it's not like they're going to have like a full working kitchen. In fact, he admits that in a recent interview to Decanter, that some of the dishes and their components will actually need to be prepared before the spaceship launches. And then they'll have to be heated and garnished in the, quote, mini kitchen.
Where are they going to heat it? In the kitchen. So they're going to use the rocket boosters to light that bad boy up?
So basically, they're paying all this money for reheated food. And obviously, you're going to do it for the experience, right? But dude, that is absolutely insane. And like I said, I am a person that appreciates good food and fine dining. I'm all for that. But $495,000, first of all, and maybe because I don't know anything about space VIP, so I'm assuming it's a safe way to travel into space.
Yeah, am I like flying up with SpaceX? Am I sitting next to William Shatner?
Okay, first of all, that's not a bad thing. Look, if I'm going to go up and have dinner, I would want to go up and have dinner with William Shatner. Because you know he's seen some shit. Okay. But outside of that, I'm guessing by the look on your face, this is not an attractive activity for you to do, right?
No, I'm not going to say that. But I'm going to need a few extra people to go before me.
You're like, I will be the first to do this.
Yeah. Okay. My concept for people in their thing about exploration.
Right.
I don't want to be the first, but I also don't want to be the last. Because of course, they're going to be leaving, you know, people that look like me behind. Because that's their whole, like, you know, mantra. But
It's like that Joe Scott Heron spoken word piece I introduced you to, Whitey on the Moon. It really is like
that. Yes, the goober introduced me to Whitey on the Moon.
Which is a spoken word piece by Jill Scott Heron.
Jill Scott Heron, yeah.
And if that sounds familiar, that's also the gentleman who is better well known for The Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
The Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
But yeah, this does seem like the embodiment of that particular piece. And we don't have time to do a deep dive on it.
No, we don't.
The show notes, you can enjoy it yourself.
Exactly. The revolution will be live. And my reaction to this will be live. Because trust me, how is it that the astronauts can go up and see, like, you know, the moon and the stars and whatever, but they can't get a $495, like, experience like this that, you know, that these six people can. I'm like, they're getting, like, some crappy MREs. And you're getting a $495,000 experience.
You know, just to kind of put it in perspective, though, that cost, rather, is more than what I've read recently was the average cost of a home, start a home in the United States. So $417,000, I think, is what they said on average. Forbes said is what, you know, typically a starter home's cost. So you're paying for more than a house. And yes, I'm sure that you're paying for the experience, but I don't know. I'll be honest. I'm not really sure if I want to do this in part because of him.
Because of him?
Well, okay. You ever see that movie that's out there called The Menu? It's like a horror movie set in like a foodie. It's a environment, right? With this ultra exclusive restaurant. Where they have all of these elitists go and eat, but there's something not quite right. And they're on this island. And yeah, Like, this dining experience that he has on the ground, the 50-course meal that goes on for 6 hours. Sona Food and Wine last year wrote an article about what it was like to take part in that. And it very much so sounds like it came from the island or the menu. Like, at one point, they started off, and it's not started with the champagne toast. They have, like, interpretive modern dance. In the end, everyone jumps in a ball pit. Amongst their courses they have is they're eating actual butterflies that have been freeze-dried and put on top of metal log. There's something else. If I remember correctly, there was also, you know, on the screen, for example. Yeah. I'm just looking at the article right now. So they have a few more stacks, included the perfect omelet with pepper infused with sound waves. You know what? If I'm going to go up and pay $495,000 to be in space with somebody, I don't think he would be the person I would want to eat from. Like, Jose Andres from the World Central Kitchen. If you ever see an interview with him, he is a delight. I would go up in space with him. Okay, Rick Bayless, yes. Okay. The great Leah Chase, may she rest in peace, yes. Him, not so much.
Okay. I can only interpret this a few ways, and bear with me because of my limited knowledge of things.
Right.
But, okay. One, who I have dinner with is very nice on the ground. Okay. And whereas, like, I would believe if I was eating with Jose Andres, you know, God rest his soul, if I'm paying $495,000, I would rather have a conversation with Jose Andres and donate to his food kitchen. So whereas the $495,000 can go help pay for people that are struggling to eat in horribly, bear with me, like, areas where, like, food deserts and people that, you know, aren't getting, like, good quality water or, you know, crops and soil. Okay, irregardless. Plus, if I'm going up in a space balloon, I'm not going to be looking at who I'm seeing eating with. I'm going to be looking around and make sure that there are no aliens, predators. What was it? The Marvel, Wizards, Warlock, Alien, Androids.
Right. Wizards, Warlocks, and Androids.
Yeah, I'm going to be looking at... I'm going to be looking at other things. Trust me.
Wizards and Androids. Exactly.
Yeah, my mind's going to be on other things as opposed to, like...
Check to make sure Thanos is not up there.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm not checking for, like, you know, for random people like in the Superman universe. I know I'm mixing up my metaphors here, but
I love you so much for that answer.
But
you're just like, dude, is Galacticus there?
Yeah. I'm like, I'm gonna be like checking to make sure, like, you know, that the satellites are working and you know that, like, you know, over the horizon that I'm not gonna get, like, you know, bombed by space beams or like asteroids aren't coming. I'm not going to be looking at the person sitting next to me or worrying about an interpretive dance. I got bigger things to worry about at that moment.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I'm sure it's a great experience, but I mean, there are too many like things going on at the same time. And I'm paying $495,000 to be like sitting there worried that I don't know where, like, you know, I'm like floating during this process.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, first of all, thank you. I never thought about that. And you were completely right. You need to watch for that shit.
You also need to make sure, like, you know, this food that I'm partaking of will stay down.
Oh yeah. Cause otherwise it's a long trip if it doesn't.
Yes.
Okay. So on that note, why don't we take a break? Gather ourselves. And when we return, we'll finish out with the best thing we ate this week, as we always do in the show. You're listening to the Gourmet Goober podcast, and we will be right back. Hey guys, I'm JJ Outlaw, better known as the Gourmet Goober, and I'm here to share this great new recipe journal from author Gaby Loreno. It's a progressive cooking journal designed for short and simple recipes at the beginning, before advancing with spaces for longer recipes as you go. It's colorful, fun, fits easily in the kitchen drawer, and it's perfect for any home cook. Best of all, it has over 100 pages for your most beloved culinary delights. Be sure to get your copy today at Amazon.com. Hey everyone, we are back. This is JJ Outlaw.
And T Outlaw.
And we're back with the third segment of the Gourmet Goober podcast, where we share the best food that we had this week. And just as a reminder, if you want to share your favorite restaurant, food truck, maybe it's a family recipe that you really adore, we want to share it with our audience. So drop us a line at thegourmetgoober@gmail.com. Again, that's thegourmetgoober@gmail.com. And maybe we will feature it on the show. So as always, Big Daddy, we start with you first. Is there something lately that we've had since last we're on the mic?
Sure. The best thing I partook of in the last time we recorded actually started off with something that the Goober suggested to me a little while ago that involved a coffee bar. And my thing was, okay, we're trying, you know, new places, new coffee and whatnot. And I went just to, you know, support the Goober, you know, who's supporting local businesses. And we went to a place, and granted, it was around lunchtime, but the Goober wanted to, like, try their coffee because, you know, we like coffee. But also, we wanted to support, one, local businesses, and also, it used to be a former bakery that we used to, that I used to frequent when I was younger. Actually, my family used to frequent also. And I went in there and, you know, of course, me being me, found a burger that I found kind of intriguing. Now, the Goober, the first time, tried the brisket. And I was like, okay, I'll just try, like, you know, because I'm a man who likes his burger. I'll try the kind of an all-American burger. And this particular tiny burger, I believe it was called Tiny's Burger.
Tiny Smash Burger.
Thank you. Was actually surprisingly refined. I was not ready for the cheese, the notes, the amount of beef that you got involved with it, the way that it was, like, prepared, like, well done, and, like, the smash value of how well it was, like, put together. And the fries that came with it were actually top notch. I was actually quite impressed. I cannot remember for the life of me what particular type of cheese that was.
Whether or not it was a blue cheese spread.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked by that.
And yeah, because you don't like blue cheese.
Yeah, usually I'm not a big fan, and it does take a little getting used to, but I was actually, you know, the way it hit my mouth was actually quite intriguing. I was not quite ready for the flavor that it packed. And I'm willing to say that this tiny smash burger was the best thing I ate this week.
Okay. So, again, this is a place in Gary, Indiana. So, it's when you think of Gary, I know that when you see it on television, oftentimes, unfortunately, you've seen, you know, businesses that are shuttered and may have seen better days. But believe it or not, this area of Gary called Miller, which is near the lake, is undergoing a revitalization of sorts. So there's been a lot of renewal that's done in terms of street art, activities. There are a lot of little shops and local businesses that's in the area. And this particular site, the Tiny's Coffee Bar, is at a legacy location that used to be known as the Miller's Bakery Cafe.
Yes.
Interesting, just as a side note, the new owners of Tiny's, I had a chance to speak with them recently, the gentleman by the name of Sean, it was his sister that up until recently owned the Miller's Bakery Cafe. So it's a new concept that they decided to change it into this coffee bar, which in and of itself is unique, that it serves coffees and drinks. It serves alcohol. It has a mini bakery, you know, baked goods that look like they're done in-house and not like the Dunkin' like we talked about earlier.
Right.
But then they do have a pretty substantial day to evening menu that runs the gamut from cinnamon rolls, again, with cream cheese and Nutella croissant, through their salmon graff lox bagel, which I happen to love, all the way through their brisket sandwiches and burgers. And then they have a late night menu that's available, which mainly are small bites. It looks like, oh gosh, they also have, just as a side note, pork bellied fried rice. Really? So we're going to be visiting for that. But the beautiful thing about this place is it pretty much looks like it's a great opportunity to bring people, hopefully attracting people who are not necessarily from the Gary area who want to take advantage of fine dining and a surprising spot. So I'm really excited that you like it. When we moved in the Northwest Indiana area some time ago, Gary wasn't necessarily the place you want to go for coffee, as there were no coffee shops that were local to it. So you'd have to go as far as Lake Station with the Dunkin' or Portage, which is a considerable drive away, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes for coffee.
Yeah, it's good to be in a space where, like, your coffee shop is reasonably, like,
local.
Local, where it's, like, walkable, as opposed to, like, having to drive somewhere just to get, like, a thing of coffee.
Or just drive long, long, long distances, rather. Because, again, just as a reminder, I drink coffee for all of you, okay?
And we appreciate that.
So every so often, I look to see if there's new places. And I found this spot, and I woke up Big Daddy like, okay, we are going today. Get your shoes on, we're going. And I'm really glad we did. Like you said, I had the brisket sandwich, you had the smash burger. Both really delightful. I mean, the brisket sandwich especially. It had jardinera, it had a fried egg on top, pickled onions. It was just chef's kiss. But the smash burger itself looked like it was an amazing thing. And, you know, there was brisket in the smash burger, right? I mean, they made it from a mix of chuck, brisket, and rib.
I did.
So, yeah, it looked absolutely amazing. Like I said, Big Daddy is not even a fan of blue cheese, but I knew it was had to have been something special because you wolfed that down like it was nothing flat. That's what let me know it was good.
Yes.
So I'm really glad you liked it. And I'm hoping that for people that are in the area, please give it a try. Because like I said, unfortunately, Gary has an unfortunate past that has led to people to not go and visit the area. But there are a lot of surprisingly great spaces, great foodie spaces that I think deserve to have a chance. So hopefully by sharing this in the show notes, particularly for those listeners that are in the greater Chicago area, hopefully you'll cross the border because it's just a short commute and we've all gone long commutes for brunch. That's just the way that things are here.
Yeah. And so, of course, with it being like, as we're going into spring, it's restaurants only like, it's barely a few minutes from the beach.
Yes. And that's good to know as well. So it's a place that you can stop off, see some of the other great arts and things that are hidden and available on Lake Street, and it'll give you an opportunity to help support a small business who may not have otherwise been seen. So yeah, thank you for suggesting that. That is actually a really awesome choice. Well, my choice, I was embarrassed to talk about it now.
Really?
Because it did not come from a small business or a restaurant this week. It was actually something that I made, but it was actually a recipe that I got from my mother. And you know how you grow up and you eat something like all the time, right? Like at least once a month, if not more often. And you just were like, when you move out the house, you are never touching that stuff again. Like, you are done. There's all these things that, you know, my mother and father prepared rather as I was growing up that were, you know, relatively simple that had to be made fairly quickly because, you know, my family, I grew up in a large family of four siblings and my mom and dad, and they both work. So they had to do something that they could make fairly easy before stepping out. And this happened to be a super simple recipe that honestly, was it last week? I just woke up and it's like, oh my God, I don't know if I dreamt about it and didn't think about it or whatever, but I woke up with a taste of it on my lips, as my grandmother used to say. And I had to make it for dinner. And that was smothered pork chops.
Smothered pork chops.
Yes. So I made it last Friday. Super simple recipe. Seriously, it's like four ingredients. It's four ingredients. I had these beautiful boneless sirloin pork chops that Big Daddy got. Or no, beautiful center cut pork chops that Big Daddy got me. Super simple to make. So, and I'll include the recipe in the show notes as well with a few ingredients. So you'll probably have them in the house. You can make it. You get the pork chop, which is done beautifully well. But then also you get this delicious, rich brown gravy that, you know, you'd have a rice or over veggies or even over noodles. It's just really, really great. I think you liked it too, right? I mean, you were telling me.
Because, you know, I'm a man, like one of my favorite home-cooked meals of all time will always be, I love a pork chop. And I love a pork chop with rice.
Right.
Uncle Ben's or Ben's original.
We will not discuss the rice issue with you again.
But yes, if for some reason I go on death row, my last meal will honestly be a pork chop with rice. Not that I'm planning on going on death row.
Well, yeah, we want to avoid that.
Yes.
But it is, if I was to have this as a final meal, I would not be upset.
Trust me, it was when I tried it, which was slightly delayed in terms of time, but it was actually honestly one of the best things I ate this week also, because it was very serene, like when I sat there. I sat there with a happy face, we'll put it that way.
Yeah, it's one of those, seriously, when you guys see the recipe, you're going to see like, oh my God, how simple is that? But it's one of those old-fashioned recipes, you know, your mama and your grandmama made, but still put a smile on your face. So sometimes you don't need the fancy. I'm pretty sure they will not serve this recipe at the $495,000 meal up in space.
Maybe they should.
But you know what? It's good eating, as we say. And I'm not ashamed. It's the best thing I had. So thanks, Mom, for teaching me how to make this.
That's right. Take that W.
So on this note, why don't we wrap things up? And Big Daddy, where can they find you online?
You can once again find me, T Outlaw, on the X, the Dirty X, at T Outlaw, TOUTLAW, and on Instagram at T Outlaw Chelsea Wells.
You can find me on Threads, on Instagram, on a whole host of things at Gourmet Goober. You can find me on Twitter/X at JJ Outlaw. And again, drop us a line anytime that you want to learn more information about the things that we talked about today, or just want to give us general feedback at thegourmetgoober@gmail.com. Speaking of the Gourmet Goober, you can also go to thegourmetgoober.com itself, and you can get the lowdown on recipes, see where we are in new events, connect with Plum Good, and find out our latest philanthropic endeavors. So the idea is that there's a multitude of ways that you can stay in touch with us. So until next time, Big Daddy and I thank you for listening, and until we meet again, happy eating.
Happy eating.